Did you know that St. Luke's University Health Network, based in the Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania, has been recognized by the U.S. government as the highest performing health system in the United States for quality? You heard right. St. Luke's number one recognition affirms our status as the top leader among the most respected healthcare providers in the nation, including Houston Methodist and the Mayo Clinic. To state it simply, if you want to receive the best care when you go to a hospital, come to St. Luke's.
When you need to build up your team to handle the growing chaos at work, use Indeed Sponsored Jobs. It gives your job post the boost it needs to be seen and helps reach people with the right skills, certifications, and more. Spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need a hiring hero? This is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs.
This is the Miller Report with Suzanne Miller on the Red Apple Podcast Network. And now, here's Suzanne Miller.
Today we have a really special guest, somebody I've known for decades. He has been a well-known figure to New Yorkers for decades. He is both known domestically and internationally for his service with the Guardian Angels and his protection for us fellow New Yorkers. I want to welcome the Red Cabaret, the man by himself, Curtis Sliwa, to the Miller Report. Thank you, Curtis. Thank you. And your energy is right on.
Well, it's Canarsie. It's Canarsie time. You were born and raised in Canarsie?
I was. We went to the same high school. He's much older than me.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. And obviously, they refer to me as the Canarsie kid. Our roots are based in Canarsie. We're out of borough folks. And so my campaign, again, for mayor this time around, second time, is really a campaign for the interests of everybody in the outer boroughs who always are forgotten. You don't see any of the other candidates in the outer boroughs.
How are you doing in Canarsie?
Very well. Even though it's predominantly West Indian, African-American now, and heavily Democrat, very well. But I have good news for you today as I arrive, Suzanne Miller, because, again, I'm the only candidate who rides the subway, doesn't just talk about it. I saw the NMTA, money-taking agency, all gathered in Times Square down by the shuttle train. And they were actually unveiling a new subway map. They didn't have a new subway map.
Canarsie's going there, what?
I don't know.
The L train.
They didn't let me close enough. Oh. God forbid I ask a question. Is that it took you since 1979 to come up with a new subway map. That's the year I started the Guardian Angels up in the Bronx, 1979, 46 years ago. And if you look at that subway map on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, when they do all the construction, the track changes, and you never can get the right train at the right time, I said, well, you really have to have a weekday map and a weekend map that's changeable by the hour because people get stranded. They don't want a map. They want you to run the system.
Well, yeah, we're going to get into trains in a minute. Trains, subways, walking, talking, all of that. Let's talk about you running here. President Trump has been running as a change agent, and that's why he won, and that's what he got here, and he did very well in New York. Do you consider yourself a change agent?
Look, my whole life has been to change what is to something that's better, and a lot of it has been devoid of politics. You go way back in Canarsie, I started the first recycling centers in the city of New York when there was no term recycling, when I was collecting bottles, newspapers, and cans by the tons. And I was involved in a lot of community activities in a predominantly Democratic area. That's what Canarsie has always been. And then eventually to become a night manager in McDonald's and create the worldwide Guardian Angels at a time where there was no police and there were gangs. So if you ever saw the cult movie classic, The Warriors, you'll know exactly what the subways were like in 79 if you weren't around at that time. And so I did it with volunteers. It didn't cost anybody money, and I did it with mostly Black, Hispanic, Asian, and white males and females doing this voluntarily. You couldn't pay people to do it back then. So obviously I know how to organize, I know how to motivate, and I know how to lift people's morale, which is so important in the city now.
This is a Democratic city, and only 11% of Republicans even voted. Only 23% of all people even voted. How do you think a Republican could possibly win in this election? Tell us.
All right, let's look at the last election, 2021. I got 29% of the vote against Eric Adams. It was only a one-on-one contest. So the Democrat clearly has the upper hand because a lot of people, although they like Curtis Sliwa, and as a Republican, I've gone into neighborhoods my whole life where the only Republican they ever saw was Abraham Lincoln on a $5 bill. There is an aversion by some Democrats to vote for a Republican. So there are three ways. Now you're probably going to have four, maybe more, in the general election. So let's hypothetically play political strategy. Andrew Cuomo might win a very heated Democratic primary. Zohran Mamdani, who's the rising star of the Democrats, Democrat socialist, he's got the young person's vote, and that's growing. He'll run as the Working Families Party. I believe Eric Adams will do what John Lindsay did in 69 when he couldn't get renominated by the Republicans. He ran as an independent, got reelected. He'll be an independent. I don't know what he'll name his party.
Do you think that Mayor Adams is going to run as an independent?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. He has not been out there. Nobody has seen him collecting signatures to qualify for the Democratic primary. And I'm out in the streets all the time. So I see the green sheets for the Democrats. I'm always going up to the young people collecting and applauding them. It's not easy getting signatures from people. What are you going to do with that signature? How do I know you're not going to be ghosting me or taking my Social Security? It's not easy getting signatures to qualify. So I applaud them, even though they may be representing a political force that I'm not aligned with. It's a very tough job. I haven't seen any Adams people out there. So the assumption has to be now that this federal case has been dropped against him, lock, stock, and barrel.
This morning.
No recriminations afterwards any longer. He's free to run as mayor the rest of the way. And remember, he just appointed Randy Mastro, his first deputy mayor, a guy who could run the city blindfolded. His personality is not my cup of tea, but Randy Mastro knows how to run the city from his days.
He's going to come. He's like that back horse. I see him moving ahead right now. You're going to see some campaigning right now.
Well, he's going to play the race card.
Yep.
I mean, that's what he always does. Suzanne Miller, I knew Eric Adams for 42 years. He was friendly with me every time he would see me.
He's a very good man.
The moment he won a very heated Democratic primary in 2021, he called me the following five things right out of the bat. They said, well, now you're running against the Republican nominee, Curtis Sliwa. Well, what do you have to say about Curtis Sliwa? He's a racist. He's a sexist. He's a misogynist. He's homophobic. And he's a xenophobe. I had vertigo from all those words. I said, I'm all that? Eric, how many times have you met me in the streets? You hugged me. My brother, Sliwa, the guardian angels, I love you. He wrote an op-ed one time in the Daily News saying when he was a transit cop, they were telling him right out of the academy, harass those guardian angels in the trains, and he refused. But now he was running for office. He tried to tag me with every negative analogy that is not me. That's the way he is. And he's going to play the race card big time against his competitor.
How do you think the ranked choice voting is going to affect this election?
Well, nobody really knows what ranked choice voting is.
So I do. Tell us.
I've studied it. You should know because you're a bingo queen, right? I've seen you at the bingo parlors there, right? Instead of playing Mahjong.
Yeah,
there,
I'm definitely a bingo girl.
At the beach,
and I do lunches.
At the Canarsie Beach Club, yeah. Right? You were playing bingo.
The Brook.
So you make your first five choices. Mm-hmm. And if you're disciplined, as the liberals, progressives, democratic socialists are, you tell everybody voting for you, do not put on that bingo card Eric Adams or Andrew Cuomo. So let's say the polls are correct. Andrew Cuomo surges ahead on the first level. But now every level thereafter, who is it that's putting ranked choice? Who's putting his name second, third, fourth, or fifth? Maybe not that many, especially if Eric Adams isn't running as a Democrat. So now they can inch up. And believe it or not, through ranked choice voting, one of them could conceivably beat Andrew Cuomo. Do I think it'll happen? Probably not if the election were tomorrow, but it's still a long way to go to the end of June.
I just had on the Miller Report before you left, Jim Walden, and he said that he's going to share with our audience some graphs. And the graphs are showing that Mamdani is 52%, and that was very frightening.
Well, I would disagree with him on that, but he is a growing power within the Democrats because he has young people. Cuomo has mostly older people.
The city is young.
The traditional Democrats.
A million people left. And by the way, I had a dinner party last week, and out of the 20 people, three could vote. So people are not voting in New York. I mean, you had only 11% Republican and 21% total.
Correct.
So how are we handling that?
And that always happens after a presidential election because of fatigue. Remember, the presidential election, 2 years.
How are you going to get people to come out and vote, Curtis?
Well, I ended up with 29%. So now I not only have to get to 29%, but wait a second, 2% probably unfortunately passed away in the interim. The other 2% fled to Florida. They didn't invest in your properties. So figure I'm at 25%. If you have four or more candidates, I'm starting with 25%. How many of them are going to go to a Cuomo or an Adams or a Mondami? I don't think that many. So I think I'm in pretty good shape. Now you have to micro-target. So instead of advertising, you know, let's say on network television, which is watched by most people who don't vote and in the suburbs who can't vote.
I'm going to interrupt you.
Yes.
People don't vote for two reasons. A, they're apathetic, or B, look at their pocketbook. So they left because if they go out to the Hamptons or Westchester, they save 4% on city tax, or they leave the state. We understand as mayor, you cannot get them to, you cannot change the tax structure. But will you propose any changes so that you can entice people to come back and vote on a tax basis where it hits their pocketbook?
Well, you're going to have candidates who say they can lure people back. That's what Eric Adams said.
He went
down to Miami right after he beat me in the election, and he said, I'm going to convince people to come back.
Tell us.
Nobody's come back. What you have to do is convince the people who are already here, invested here, to stay here.
There's not enough.
Right, but in the residential areas where you and I grew up, Canarsie, Mill Basin, Marine Park, Middle Village, Glendale, the North Bronx, Throgs Neck, out in Staten Island, where people own homes, they have equity. If they're going to sell their homes, you're going to watch a steep decline. The only reason they're not selling now, high mortgage interest rates. If they were back to 3% when Trump left office after the first time, you're going to see a wholesale evacuation because people are halfway out the door. So you have to convince them to stay. Now, how do you do that? No more shelters. They're putting shelters in the outer boroughs. Why are you building shelters and putting homeless people
in
shelters?
Let's get into the details in a minute, but I want to just stay on the political arena of winning.
Yeah.
So you're running as a Republican. Who do you think the Democratic nominee will end up being?
If the election were tomorrow, Andrew Cuomo. But I'm not sure he wins ranked choice voting. If it's done right, he could be beat. Now, why do I think a Republican can win when there are so few Republicans? Because I have a second line that everybody loves.
What's that?
The animal welfare line. It's the only time I've ever had conversation with Trumpers and those who love Biden and Harris.
You have a lot of cats.
Cats, dogs, other animals, no-kill shelters. It's an icebreaker with people. Because if you notice, even in Manhattan, how many people are out walking their dogs in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening? They love animals. A Pew Research study recently said 97% of Americans now view their pets as family members. They have more pictures on their cell phone, iPhone, and smartphone of their pets than they do of their children, grandchildren.
Too bad pets can't vote.
No, but people who own pets, sometimes they are one-issue voters. You know that. I mean, look at even Leona Helmsley. Could you be any more evil than Leona Helmsley? Only little people
she
pay
wasn't
taxes.
Evil.
Oh, my God. Only little
I've
people
I've met
pay.
Her. She wasn't evil.
But who did she bequeath most of her money to?
Her dogs.
Her dog. She loved her dog. People love their animals more than they love their siblings, their husbands, their wives, their children especially, and their grandchildren. And you're going to see a lot of people will vote for me because they won't vote for me as a Republican. They just can't. They feel that's a right. curse against their parents or grandparents. But as the animal welfare candidate, yes. And my secret weapon is my wife, Nancy, who everybody knows not only is dedicated a life to saving animals, but is the hostess of the Animal Welfare Podcast here at WABC.
Well, we have to save our city, not our animals right now. So let's move on to our city.
Now, hold on. You like Mahatma Gandhi?
No.
Not his dress, right? But he said a society that does not care for its animals does not care
for its
people.
We're not saying we don't care for the animals. We're saying the animals can't vote.
No. I understand. But the people who take care of the animals can. They spend more on their animals than
they spend on their family. I think people care more about their dollars. Let's move on. I beg to differ.
Wait a second. If they're spending more on their pets in the marketplace than they are their family members, that means they're concerned about their pets.
I could agree to disagree. I don't think somebody is going to cast a vote because they like their cat or dog more than they do their safety, their pocketbook.
You know how many one-issue voters there are out there? Not just we're talking
one-issue voters, maybe on Israel.
and Jews, right, and anti-Semitic attacks.
That I see.
And real estate and other issues, and I understand that because
crime, crime.
Well, if you listen to Eric Adams and Jessica Tisch, you know, it's our perception. But let's face it, on the minds of all voters, no matter who they are, rich, middle class, poor, the lack of quality of life and the high crime and the fear of crime is what is driving people to leave the city.
Exactly. And now, all the candidates are, it's very difficult to meet a budget. We understand that. And as I said to Jim a minute ago, everybody's talking, all the candidates except for one, the socialist, wants to increase the police. Mm. But you have to do that within budget. And you still have to, if you look at the latest budget, it's not very good. And it's going to be very tough to meet the budget. How are you going to increase the police by within keeping the budget? What services will you cut?
That's excellent. But I ask you, where did we find $5 billion to care for the illegal aliens, the migrants?
We'll get into that. Where they're going to go now.
But the point is, we found $5 billion. The money is there. They took $1 billion from the police, never put it back from the days of de Blasio. You have the Department of Education, the biggest bloated bureaucracy, $41 billion and growing. That's more than a third of the budget. You take from there, you cut all the upper non-existent people who are getting paid. The money should go to the children and the teachers in the classroom. It's
and
not
the
going
pets.
There. Excuse me?
And the pets.
Oh, the pet. We're no pets in the schools, other than to teach the kids to be pet friendly.
Okay, so you want to take it from the where the migrants are? You want to take where else are you going to get the money?
Well, clearly you take it from where the migrants are because we should not be welcoming any more migrants into the city, although they shuffle them around. Look, think of all the candidates running. Are any of them anti-shelter like I am? No. Anti-migrant shelter? No. The city of yes, I don't know what your position
is on that.
We're going
to get on that in a minute.
But it's going to destroy residential neighborhoods. Yes. I'm the only one standing up to that. And these warehouses for lithium-ion batteries that nobody has heard about that are popping up all in the outer boroughs that I've led protests against. You know what happens? You know where Flatbush and Quentin Road is?
Yes.
You know where the Oasis Diner is, right?
Yes.
Do you know they're putting a lithium warehouse, lithium ion battery place there for half a block? If it goes on fire, which sometimes happens, it takes 5 days for it to burn itself out. What do you think will happen to that residential property and everyone's equity? It'll plummet. It'll be like a mini Chernobyl, and there are no guarantees.
Curtis, I understand that, but I want to stay on budget and not defunding the police, which is, as Andrew Cuomo was the first person who said on the Miller Report, the stupidest idea ever was to defund the police.
Well,
so he wants to increase the police by at least 5,000.
Well, yeah, but he has no answer on how to do that.
Well, he's not here, but I'm asking you.
But let me ask you a question.
I'm asking you.
He said defund the police, but when he was governor, he was defunding the police.
Okay, we could agree to disagree on that as well, but let's go on to you're here,
sure,
he's
exactly.
Not. I want to know how you're going to find the money and stay on budget to fund the police, and how many more police officers will you put on the streets?
Oh, I have the most, 7,000. You need that because we're losing police officers every day. We're down to 32,500, and it's not even leveling out. The morale is at an all-time low. People don't want to join the police. Jessica Tisch, who is the police
commissioner. She's doing a great job.
At One Police Plaza, but she doesn't know how to stem the flow out of the police department of people who
how would you do it?
The way you have to build their morale, you have to go out there to the precincts, not do it from One Police Plaza, and tell the men and women of the department, I got your back. If you get sued, we're going to support you, unless you went over the edge. Now, there's no qualified immunity for cops. That means they're on their own if they get sued.
On the Miller Report, we talk about real estate, as you know.
Good.
And we have a shortage of housing. And the values of people leave New York because their value is going down, because they don't feel safe.
Yes.
And there's a shortage of housing. Firstly, where would you put the 100,000 migrants that are still here? Where are you going to house them?
Well, they're already being housed, right? Some of them are in hotels. Some of them are
we're closing the hotels. We closed the Roosevelt Hotel. Where do you suggest we put them?
Well, you know, they're doubling up. They're tripling up in a lot of these apartments that are fire traps. They're being shoved into basements. They're being shoved into garages. Nobody from the Department of Buildings inspects buildings for how they're chop-shopping up apartments and making it very dangerous, not only for the migrants, but also for the firefighters who might have to come in and fight the fires. So this is the problem. We have rent-subsidized apartments. It was as many as 50,000 that were taken off the marketplace
because
they couldn't get market rates. And they couldn't get a guarantee that if they brought a tenant in and the tenant was a deadbeat or was a problem, that they could ever get them out.
Housing court, 2 years.
It'll take you 5, 6, sometimes 7 years. And I've heard these nightmare stories, especially in the outer boroughs, by the small property owner. You know, 2-family, 3-family, 4-family house. That's it. And they can't afford a big law firm. Meantime, we in the city pay for legal aid to defend tenants who clearly are out to abuse.
I heard a story this morning by a mutual friend of ours.
Yeah.
Then a tenant moved into one apartment, took a broker's fee, said they were a broker. The landlord paid them a broker's fee, never paid a dollar of rent. It's been 4 years. And then the owner of the building walked into the elevator and the guy shook his hand and said, "Nice to meet you. I love living here." Isn't that nice?
No, this happens all the time. Now, there's a rage out there. So you have to say, you have to first go into tenant landlord court and say, who are the advocates for, especially the smaller landlords? Because remember, in the outer boroughs, I am finding out when a apartment is empty, they're not putting it up for rent. Why? They fear getting a tenant that they won't be able to remove if they don't pay their rent or if they're vandalizing property. And how many of them, upon finally being ejected by the marshals, end up vandalizing the property? So a lot of these homeowners are saying, yeah, I invested a lot of money in this 2-family house, but I'm going to leave that apartment empty. I'm not going to take a chance. So right away, that takes off the market. So let's say that's 50,000 units that are not available now. All of these plans, city of, yes, 80,000 apartments in 10 years. Someone else says 100,000. These are apartments that with a little rehab could be put on the marketplace. You got to sit with the landlords. You got to say, what do you need from the city? How can we make it good for you so you're going to release these apartments and not warehouse them, which is happening in the city? And then you have people who are coming in. You know, I look at Long Island City. It's great. You know, you have these huge towers, magnificent. But I know a lot of people are coming in and they're buying apartments as an investment. And that's an apartment that's not available for anyone unless you're going to offer them money as they flip that and make money. A lot of foreigners. So you got to look at all of it. No one's really at fault here because in 1960, when I was only 6 years old, there was an apartment shortage then. Well, I remember, can I ask you one quick story? We used to have a rent party right there in the street. So if somebody couldn't pay the rent and we knew that that was a good resident as opposed to who knows who you get to replace, everybody would contribute $5, $5, pay the person's rent so they could continue to live on the block. Obviously, they don't do that any longer, but that was a problem back then. There was never enough affordable space or affordable apartments. The city of New York has always been in that bind.
I think everybody agrees the housing court has to be revamped. Everybody agrees that the warehouse departments need to come on the market.
Everybody?
You have to, well,
not the socialists, not the liberals,
true.
Not
that's
the progressives.
Not true.
And not most Democrats.
Exactly. Well, I do think that the city's become very much in favor of the tenants and the landlords have been thrown out the window and nobody's paying attention. And the tax revenue is coming from the landlords. So once if they didn't pay their taxes, the city would have a tremendous deficit. So we do need to recognize the landlords. We understand that. But I'm talking more specifically about most cities, and every city needs the middle class. They need housing for the police officers, for the firemen, for the sanitation. They cannot afford to live in these cities with the kind of salaries that they make. And without this middle class and the working people, the cities cannot run. Where do you suggest we put the infrastructure, the heart of our city workers? Where should they live?
Well,
what would you do?
It's not affordable for them to live in Manhattan or the outer boroughs. It's
how do you
not
fix
affordable.
That?
That's why they will drive as much as 2 hours. These are the clerical workers to live in the Poconos, which is much more affordable. You get a half acre, a better public school system.
You think a police officer should go live in the Poconos?
At this rate, if we can't subsidize where they live in the city of New York, the first 5 years, you know, many of these police officers end up living on the Castro convertible or their mom and dad in an apartment or a house.
Maybe one of the candidates should consider this. Okay. Maybe one of these candidates, maybe yourself, you should think about where we're going to house the police officers. So they want to be more of
right.
them.
And there are candidates, some, who demand that the police officers have to live in the city. If you don't make it affordable in the first 5 years, how are they going to afford to live in the city? They live in the basement
of
their mom and dad's house or in their apartment on their Castro convertible. So you have to subsidize them if you want them to live in the city. I feel like anyone else, you should have the right to live wherever you want. If you're in the UFT, you're a teacher. You know, you can live in Hartford, Connecticut. As long as you could get to your school in time and teach your lessons, it's okay. Why is it that one union can live anywhere and other unions are restricted? Now, if you make it affordable, that should be one of the choices that uniform services have or the other union members. Every day, if you go to the Port Authority, and I pass through there, 4:30, 5 o'clock, all the clerical workers, DC-37, the bulk of the union work, they're taking that red bus up to the Poconos. Now, they're not supposed to be, but I can't damn them. I can't criticize them for wanting a better quality of life. If we would make a better quality of life here, they would probably want to stay and not take a two-hour trip coming in the morning and a two-hour trip going back.
I still would like
night.
To hear your plan of where you're going to put them, but we'll move on. I'm going to go into a subject that you're very familiar with, which is the subways. The MTA is reporting that subway ridership is up 25%, and they've made an extra $2 million this year, $51 million, more than anticipated. Are you in favor of congestion pricing, or where do you think that should be?
Did they pass math in school? Could you give me those figures again? Of course ridership is up because you got one-third of the people not even paying their fares just stand there at a normal station, and they're going over the turnstile.
But it's brought in $51 million, according to...
Oh, that's what they say. And congestion pricing, they say, will bring in $800 million.
So you think they're lying?
Well, let's say it does. All that will do is offset the fare evasion. We lose $800 million a year because people aren't paying their fares on buses and subways. So you got to enforce. You pay the fare or you don't get in. And that also helps you keep people off the system who are up to no good. And there are a lot of people riding that subway who are there for the worst reasons. Women are the ones most often harassed.
Where do you think the money generated by this increased fare should be spent?
Well, number one, there should be no congestion pricing. So I'm hoping that President Donald Trump, Lee Zeldin, the EPA chief, former congressman.
Why?
Because all it is a tax. It isn't helping the city. Now, when they say, oh, it's helped business.
It's helping the MTA.
Well, you say it's helping the MTA. I question that. I think, if anything, it keeps people out of the city. Now, we have disparaged New Jersey. You know how many people from New Jersey come in to the restaurants, to go shopping, to go to the theater, who fuel our economy? If they're not coming in, where are we getting all this extra income from? Now, would you trust the MTA that has always cooked the books going way back? Or would you trust the fact that they're not running the system the way it should at peak optimum efficiency?
Well, if you add more police officers, then maybe the subways would be safer and it all is...
Well, it's not just police officers. You never see a police officer going up and down a moving train. It's what used to happen when I first started a patrol with the Guardian Angels. It's what I do as a Guardian Angel. I go up and down the moving trains.
So why can't we allow that?
Well, they should. But unfortunately, for some reason, they say they're going to do it. I've never seen it. Occasionally, I see the cops. They're standing on the platforms. They're up at the turnstiles. And they're looking at their cell phones. They're attached to their cell phones. Now, you can't tell me they're getting instructions from the local precinct. They're sexting, they're texting, they're doing everything on their personal cell phone that they should not be doing on duty. You got to get productivity from the cops who are assigned to the subway. And where the problems are on the moving trains.
So you're against congestion pricing. You're on record to
completely.
Say that. Okay.
77 WABC and Bergen New Bridge Medical Center honor the life of legendary broadcaster and our friend, Ernie Anastas.
Hi, it's Ernie Anastas. You know, your thoughts can affect how you feel. Bergen New Bridge Medical Center is the largest hospital in New Jersey, providing comprehensive, equitable, compassionate, and high-quality emergency inpatient and outpatient medical care, plus mental health services and substance use disorder treatment. The Bergen New Bridge team can address your total health needs in one convenient location. Call 201-225-7130 for an appointment or newbridgehealth.org.
This episode is brought to you by Prime. Obsession is in session. And this summer, Prime Originals have everything you want. Steamy romances, irresistible love stories, and the book to screen favorites you've already read twice. Off Campus, Elle, Every Year After, The Love Hypothesis, Sterling Point, and more. Slow burns, second chances, chemistry you can feel through the screen. Your next obsession is waiting. Watch only on Prime.
Ready to soundtrack your summer? With Red Bull Summer All Day Play, you choose a playlist that fits your summer vibe the best. Are you a festival fanatic, a deep end DJ, a road dog, or a trail mixer? Just add a song to your chosen playlist and put your summer on track. Red Bull Summer All Day Play. Red Bull gives you wings. Visit redbull.com/brightsummerahead to learn more. See you this summer.
Girl, winter is so last season. And now spring's got you looking at pictures of tank tops with hungry eyes. Your algorithm is feeding you cutoffs. You're thirsty for the sun on your shoulders. That perfect hang on the patio sundress. Those sandals you can wear all day and all night. And you've had enough of shopping from your couch. Done hoping it looks anything like the picture when you tear open that envelope? It's time for a little in-person spring treat. It's time for a trip to Ross. Work your magic.
Let's move on to this proposal that is on right now for the small homeowners. We're switching a little bit back to real estate.
Yep.
So there's small homeowners that used to do Airbnb, and now that's been banned. So there's a group that's been formed. I think it's 63 families, well, actually 630 families that are banding together, and they're trying to allow them to rent out their apartments. We have a shortage of apartments to allow for Airbnb. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, Airbnb is part of laissez-faire economics, supply and demand. We know the hotel owners and operators
are against it,
who have wine, dined, and pocket lined Eric Adams in this case, are totally opposed to it. I would be open to examining how it has existed before, when they allowed it, and the crackdown, how it exists in other cities. I can understand why somebody might want to short-term rental their property and not have a long-term potential pain in the neck as a tenant. I would want to explore Airbnb because it definitely will help people offset their expenses.
I hope everybody's listening to that. That's a good one. Let's move on to a larger topic about the sanctuary city in New York. What is your position on it?
Look, it's very simple. We know there are two points of view on sanctuary city. I'm opposed to it, but I would put it up for an initiative and referendum. You could do that. There's a thing called charter revision. The mayor now controls it. He could put it on the ballot this November. Do you know how many more people would come out and vote instead of, as you pointed out, the 21% on both sides? People are more passionate about principles, concepts.
Could you say that
politician.
Again? You could put that on the ballot?
You can put it on the
so
ballot.
So you could give it to the people?
You give it to the people. What do you suggest as a resident of New York City? Do you think we continue on with sanctuary city status, or are you opposed?
And whoever wins, that's how it becomes?
It does. You have a right to challenge it once again, put it on the ballot like we did with term limits. But I would be satisfied to go with the choice of the people because I know both sides will argue. Many people will come out to vote. It'll be passionate. It won't just be a low turnout election. Eric Adams can do it, but he won't do it. And I think we should leave it to
them. Why won't he do it?
He won't do it because, he's never able to take a position that's going to anger somebody. He dances both ways. And when you're a mayor, that's why no mayor has ever successfully run for president and for higher office. You make too many enemies if you're a good mayor. You'll never get elected to higher office. It's the end of the line when you're mayor, even when you're Bloomberg with billions of dollars. Where did he go after that? He could not. All he won in the presidential election was America Samoa, even though he was willing to spend billions of dollars. Didn't matter.
What's your position on the schools, the education system? Do you think it should be given back to the states, or do you agree that it should be dismantled?
No, you have to continue with mayoral control. I remember the old Board of Elections down on 110 Livingston Street, in which you had a representative from each borough. It was chaotic. But the mayoral control has to say, one-third of our students are absent from school every day, truancy. Well, when did that start? Oh, that's right, the lockdown and pandemic.
Let's talk about the schools and the masks in Columbia. What is your position on that? Do you think they should be allowed to march with masks, free speech, be deported? Take us through your position.
Well, no, if you're going to deport somebody, everybody is entitled to due process. You can't just pick people up, put them on a plane, and send them to Gitmo or send them to that supermax prison in El Salvador. You want to put them through the criminal justice system. If they plea out or they're found guilty, they have to do their time here. Once everyone back in their country of origin realize they're doing their time here, less gangbangers and sex traffickers and drug dealers are going to try to sneak back in. They know how to sneak back in because they're making a lot of money by going back and forth. What Trump has been successful is just stopping the ordinary migrants from coming across the border.
I'm asking
very effective.
About the masks and the marching.
Oh, yeah, so the masks should go. Well, a march. Everyone has the right to protest. We hear that ad nauseum. You got to get a permit from the police department. You have to be in a contained area. You got to get a sound permit. It only takes one day from one police plaza to get the permit. Ever since Bill de Blasio, he's let demonstrators run through the streets. Adam has added to it. Governor Cuomo, de Blasio, they let the people
run. So what
run.
Would you do as mayor if they were protesting against burning American flags, burning Jewish flags, chanting death to Israel, Jewish students hiding under desks? As mayor, what would you do?
Well, remember, Cooper Union, we saw that there were the pro-Hamas students who came over from NYU. The Jewish students were barricaded into the library at Cooper Union, which is by Astor Place. You know who protested against that? Curtis Lewa, the guardian angel, Sid Rosenberg, his wife Danielle, and maybe 40 Jews in the rain. Where was everybody else?
I think Mayor Adams stood up initially and said, if they're coming for us, they're coming for you.
Yeah, but
we're all together.
But he wanted it both ways. He didn't go to Columbia University. He didn't stand up to the rabble. No mask, no towels over your head to cover your identity.
Is that your position?
Absolutely. And there's photo recognition technology that we've spent millions of dollars on that de Blasio would not let the police department use. And also Adams, he uses it occasionally. You know, 99% of the people who commit a crime with photo recognition technology, it nails them. When, let's say, you get victimized and hit in the head, and you really don't see the violator, a lot of times you're doing a sketch, you're picking the wrong person out of a lineup. Photo recognition technology nails that person 99%
of the time. Why isn't
that
being done?
Well, because you have the ACLU legal aid that says it's a violation of people's rights. It's really to prevent more arrests and more incarceration. But I want to arrest the right people who did the crime, not the wrong people. We've seen many cases of that, of men, mostly African-American men, locked up 20, 25 years for a crime they didn't do because some victim misidentified them in a lineup or they did a sketch that seemed to match them. If we have the technology that can nail it, why aren't we using it? Why? I would use it all the time, and we would be sued. But I would get corporation counsel to defend. And I think the people of New York would defend the mayor in that aspect of spending money because they would know this is technology that protects the innocent and actually finds the guilty.
What is your position on the city's role of ICE? Are you for it or are you against it?
Well, ICE is going to make mistakes. When you make a mistake, you apologize. You release the person. I'm sorry. You're probably going to get sued. But we have a tendency in government, no matter who's in charge, of never admitting mistakes. Oh, we're not going to admit mistakes. Now, ICE has already snatched up some people. It turned out were the wrong people. Release them, apologize.
Have they released them?
Well, they say we can't. You know, they delay.
Who's the wrong person?
The wrong person is because somebody has...
I mean, can you tell us any particular names?
Well, in Maryland, there was a gay guy with tattoos. They said he was a violent member of a Venezuelan gang. I could see how you would make that mistake initially, but they sent him to that Supermax prison in El Salvador. Everybody recognized he's not a gangbanger, okay? And you're putting a gay guy in those cells with those guys, those marauders? Bring him back. Well, we can't do it right now. He's in the custody of El Salvador. You send a jet down there and you bring them back. Show the American people. Yes, we make some mistakes, but it's a very small percentage. And when we do, we'll acknowledge it and we'll make sure you're free. And we know we're going to get sued. That's all part of the process.
And last question. Of course, we know your answer, but just tell our audience, what about bail reform?
Bail reform. Well, it has to be a change at the state level, which is difficult.
Right.
Because the left wing controls both the assembly and the state senate. So every time there's a crime committed in somebody's assemblymatic or state senate district in New York City, the mayor has the power to bring the media with him. You go into that area, you name and shame the local elected official. You say, well, you know, we would have had this guy arrested and we would have had him off the streets, remanded to jail, no bail. But your elected state assembly person, blankety blank blank, is not in favor of that. You put the pressure, you name and shame. Eric Adams now will not even name and shame Alvin Bragg. Now, we know why he won't name and shame Alvin Bragg, because Alvin Bragg will indict him now, especially since these federal charges have been dropped. He has the right to do that. So Eric Adams will never name and shame anybody who's his adversary, other than now that he's in a contest. He'll probably be arguing with Cuomo and Zohran Mamdani, and then arguing with me, too, since we'll probably be in the Final Four.
Who do you think is going to be in the Final Four?
Well, clearly Curtis Sliwa, because I've been nominated by all five counties of the Republican Party. You'll probably have Zohran Mamdani by the Working Families Party, which hates Cuomo because he tried to put him out of business. I think Andrew Cuomo will be victorious in the Democratic primary, or that can change. And Eric Adams will run as an independent, and there might even be others who can qualify to run as an independent. More is better than less. Let's have more debates. Let's have more discussion. Let the people decide.
So tell our audience, 6 million people, why you think Curtis Sliwa is the right man to run the best city in the world.
All you got to do. You see, this is the pitch.
We're ready.
Sliwa for NYC.com. You see all of my positions, all of the platforms that I've taken on that the other candidates, for the most part, don't. And then you can compare like you do when you're buying stocks or you're buying real estate, whatever you're doing. Because really what you're doing is you're choosing a leader who has to guide us out of this mess, this mishigash, and it really is. Everybody is saying that other than the mayor who...
What's the first thing you're going to do if you become mayor?
The first thing?
First thing you're going to do.
That I'm going to do?
Yeah.
Help the homeless and the emotionally disturbed in the subways. Remove them, get them into mental health care hospitals, and get them into the remaining shelters. That's what I do all the time with the Guardian Angels. Nobody knows about this problem better than me because I'm the only candidate who rides the subways, who knows the homeless, who knows the emotionally disturbed. None of them do. Come on. You go down there occasionally for a photo op with 12 armed guards. Curtis Lee, who travels by myself, that's why I'm the people's mayor. You've seen the jacket. Does it say the Republican mayor? No, it says the people's mayor. I can go into neighborhoods where the only Republican they've ever seen is Abraham Lincoln on a $5 bill and be accepted. People may not vote for me, but very few people dislike me because I know I've been here for 46 years helping all New Yorkers, even if they don't like me.
So how do you think Andrew Cuomo is doing?
Well, he's patronizing different groups. Every different group, he says, this is the number one problem. I noticed he was at a synagogue, and he told the 200 Jews who were there, who were supporters of his, that the number one problem in New York City is anti-Semitism. Now, it's a huge problem. It's not the number one problem. It doesn't even show up in any of the polls that he's ahead amongst his fellow Democrats. But he knows it resonates if you happen to be Jewish and you feel you're being targeted both on campus and in the streets. But that's not a fair statement because now you actually end up creating, believe it or not, more anti-Semitism because people said, oh, you're only interested in taking care of the Jews. You're not interested in taking care of us. I can say that as a Gentile because I know how Gentiles think. And remember, I'm a guy whose two youngest sons are raised Jewish, and I've grown up with Jews like you in Canarsie.
So you think that there's not more Jewish voters than any other voters in New York? What are the demographics on that?
No. I mean, you start, and remember, very poor turnout, as you mentioned, and you're right, 21% of all those who are eligible to vote, no matter what their party affiliation. The danger you have here is that the really ideologically pumped up to come out in a primary in a general election in a low turnout are young people. And they're starting to coalesce around Zohran Mamdani. So by consistently bashing him, and he needs to be criticized, but by making him public enemy
giving
number one.
Giving him any PR is PR.
You actually, believe it or not, strengthen him because what do young people always like to side with? They side against their parents. They side against tradition. They side against their school administration. And they may not know Zohran Mamdani, probably don't know what he stands for, but they'll say, if they're all against him, we're for him. Beware of the person that you create as the number one villain of New York City.
Little rich kid that went to Bronx Science that comes with all this money and pretends to be the people, part of Friends of the People, who's very wealthy, is running as what?
Well, it's interesting. If you just look at it from a Jewish perspective, Jabotinsky, who created the Zionist movement to find a home of their own, the Jews, he was looking at Israel, Palestine as it called it then, and he was looking at Uganda, which is where Zohran Mamdani is originally from, an Indian
family. No, he's Indian.
I know, but Indians have traveled the world just like Jews have traveled the world. Just like you can find Lebanese all over the world because they were business people. They set up businesses. They were the merchant class. And you can find them all over the world. You can find Jews even in Mongolia. Indian families everywhere because they were merchants. Lebanese, there aren't that many Lebanese. You know, you'll find them all over the place because they were a merchant class and they actually created businesses where there were no businesses before.
Well, on that note, Curtis, you're the only one running on a Republican ticket. You are here for the people, and we're going to get out, and we're going to get your name out, and I wish you the best of luck.
Why don't you host a roundtable of all the candidates who survived the primary process?
I think I might just, well, love to do that. It may happen.
I'm ready.
Who's ever listening, you never know.
I'm ready and willing
right now. We just left. Jim Walton just left, and I'm sure we can get the...
Well, you know, the quickest way to get Curtis Sliwa, just give me a microphone. I'm there.
Thank you, Curtis. Thanks for coming on The Miller Report.
Thanks for listening to The Miller Report. Download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.